Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Oh, yeah. Parenthood this time. Parenthood, directed by Ron Howard from 1989. The good old 80s.
Yeah, and it's pretty timeless.
Yeah, I agree with you. It is a timeless deal. I really love this movie and have all since I saw it. Mm-hmm. Which I'm sure was in a theater back in the 80s. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So, but yeah, really good. Ron Howard. So we've seen Ron Howard here before, at least Apollo 13. I can't remember if we did another one. And then is this the first time we've done anything with Steve Martin in it? I think it is. But
yeah,
I am a fan.
I don't think he's been in...
You mean we didn't talk about The Jerk? Wasn't that in the first year?
First year, have had to get me to watch it.
I don't think we've talked about The Jerk.
There would have been pretty good heel marks right up to that screen.
Yeah. Oh, I've always liked
The
Steve
Man with
Martin.
Two Brains. I guess we didn't watch that one. That's my favorite old one.
That's so great. But yeah, he's so interesting to me, Steve Martin.
Yeah.
It's kind of like I grew up with him, you know, because I remember when I was a teenager listening to comedy albums, which are not family friendly. And, you know, he used to play to stadiums, stand up comedy. And then he went Then he went through this phase where, and this is one of them where he plays a dad.
I like him a lot. I respect him as a person. All the things. And now that he's doing only Murders in the Building, it's fun to see him transition into this, which is both fun but also kind of serious underneath with a few of the themes about old age and stuff like that.
Yeah, so. I agree. It's really terrific idea, that show, and so well done. It's 4 seasons in at this recording, and there's going to be a 5th, I understand. And
excellent.
I've enjoyed the heck out of it. Just it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Us too.
So cool. And Ron Howard makes a brief appearance.
Yes.
So,
that was perfect too.
You bet.
Yeah.
So this is really early in Ron Howard's career, I believe. Maybe not super early. I don't know when he first did a movie, but this movie is like... I read the Robert Ebert review, and you mentioned him earlier to me off the podcast, but his first sentence is, it says, Parenthood is a delicate balancing act between comedy and truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's terrific. You watch this movie, and there are real moments that just make you laugh and... make you cry. It's really so the movie is about the Buckman family. Steve Martin plays Gil Buckman, and he's got some brothers and sisters, and they're all adults and they have kids of their own, and there's still there's a grandma. I mean, so it goes all the way from, like, grandma all the way down to, like, a brand new baby.
3-year-old, I think
or whatever. But all of these people in this family, and it's just crazy that in 2 hours you feel like you know all these people, because you think, you know, gosh, there's such a short time that you spend with everybody because there's so much going on. But... it's just a movie that I've always liked since the day I saw it. And anyway, I was glad that you like it too.
Oh, well, no, it's same with me and my husband. We saw it at the theater and just fell in love. And as soon as we could get a copy, we did and watched it over and over. And one of the things that Roger Ebert said, which I really liked, is He said almost everyone in the movie has both parents and children.
Mm.
And we see how they react to their parents' ideas of parenthood. But you also see how they can't shake being their parents' child either. And that's what I think makes it so work so well. The reason it's so funny and I think so popular is we all recognize all these people and we recognize all these families. They're different kind of types of families we recognize, and the people's problems within the families are more individualized, so we can also then relate to that on that level. And it's just masterfully done. And also, when they're zeroing in on each family with their situations, that's why we can remember it too.
Mm.
Because they're paying close attention to the people.
Yeah.
And what's driving them. And because it's driven by wanting to be a good parent, wanting to like relate to your father in this way, where it's the father, you know, the Steve Martin and all the Buckman's father is Jason Robards, who's just amazing in this. But he's a real dominant figure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whenever he's around, because that's how fathers are a lot of the time.
Right.
And so, so you look at how he's in there dealing with one of his kids who's having trouble. I mean, it's all bouncing off each other just in the way a big family does it. And this isn't even that big a family. I mean, I guess there's four kids, but my family wasn't really around a lot of extra relatives. My father was an only child, and my mother, for some reason, just never had anything to do with her two sisters. So whatever cousins I had or whatever, I didn't ever know them. And but my husband is one of five boys, and his mother is one of three people or three girls who they all had a bunch of kids. One had nine, one had seven. His father's sister had like five also. I mean, and they all lived in Houston together.
Oh, wow.
You know, just real close to each other. So he grew up with more of this kind of situation. And I was very happy to be part of that and just see how big family was.
Mm.
And all the peripheral people who are, you know, well, this cousin so-and-so. We don't know if he's really a cousin, but that's just what he's called. He comes to everything, you know. Him, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that's
interesting to know about you. Yeah, I don't know that this has come up before. But
no.
But my family was isolated from our family really most of the time. Meaning I was born on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And we moved to Idaho when I was like in kindergarten. So all of the family of both my mom and my dad live on the East Coast. So it's not that we never saw them, but it wasn't common.
It was rare.
It was rare, right? So, but every now and then, you know, there'd be a get together. And so my dad had, he was one of three and my mom was one of two.
Okay.
That's
more like my family.
Yeah.
Also,
and then I'm in a family of, we had four kids in the family I grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
So there was plenty of activity.
Yes. And there were three of us. So there was stuff. And, but watching Tom's family, just seeing all these extra people come in.
Mm.
And then there's people who, oh, here's Anna Cecile. And she grew up with my mother and her sisters. And she always came to all the family events.
Mm-hmm.
Because she felt like she was part of the family, and they did too. And so they just, I mean, it's much more than you see in this movie. But the sense of chaos and the way people would kind of give each other looks or comment on, you know, like, you know, this is your uncle, so Uncle Larry, don't ever lend him any money, you know, kind of thing. These little jokes and the little things that get said in that initial party that's happening. That felt really a lot like being at one of Tom's family's get-togethers.
Yeah. Just very good. And that's what my family is like now. Like, we got together for a wedding. Trying to remember when that was. It was last year, maybe in the fall. Mm-hmm. But everybody came. So, so all of us, you know, siblings that have kids, some of those kids are having kids. And it's getting to be quite a group now. Yeah.
Yeah. And my mom's 90th birthday. Everybody came for a family reunion. And except the one kid who lives in Florida or whatever, I mean, in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
But and it's the same thing, because it's that way with any group of people, right? there, people know each other in a way that other people can't know them because family is just different.
Yeah, it is.
And this movie communicates that so well, you know?
Yeah, I do love that. Yeah, everybody has parents and children in this show. Yeah, that's really profound. But you're right, they're, you know, when we think about Gil, and should we hold off on spoilers? I feel like we should go forward, or do we need a better explanation? Okay, let's just go on.
Yeah, it's just watching everybody try to deal with the problems in their life. Usually the ones who are the parents of all these kids, from teenage level down to toddler level, they're trying to deal with their lives. Like Gil is, he's trying to get a partnership at his firm, and but he also is trying to give more time to his son, who they've just kind of realized he's got some emotional problems or something, maybe. So he's trying to fix that by being a closer, better father, and just stuff like, everybody's got stuff like that they're dealing with.
Yeah, and feeling responsible for what's going on with his kid. I mean, there was a responsibility to be with the kid, yeah.
Yeah.
But actually feeling like he may have messed this kid up somehow, you know, and that feeling that you can't be. And then his feeling that he was messed up by his dad.
Kind of feeling, right?
Yeah, which we
want to blame.
Yeah, we see that in the very first lines of the movie. You know, it's what they opened with, was this kid at a baseball game. And his dad brings him the game. It's all quite sweet. And then the dad pays somebody to sit with him so he can go run off and do something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I love that they pulled that off so well. And then the kid just starts to speak like an adult, you know, to this usher at this ball game. Yeah, it was.
I'm an amalgam.
Yeah, it was just.
You get to have a beautiful wife, lovely family. Right. I'm an amalgam, says the usher.
Oh, yeah.
And
the script was just superb, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like that. You get to feel this with Gil, and you get to feel his feelings for his son and what he feels like he needs to do for his son, his feelings that he's a crap father when we're witnessing a good one.
Yes.
And then it all culminates in this moment where his dad comes to him for advice. And it's like,
he says, you're a good father.
You gotta be kidding me. Yeah. And he actually says, you know, I know that you think I was a bad father, and, you know, we know that you were a good one. You are a good one. And how powerful that was.
Mm-hmm.
It was so powerful. Just, you know, so the script, man, it just really nailed it.
Yeah. And that conversation is so good because, his father's trying to figure out what to do with the youngest brother, Larry, who, you know, this is the thing where people say there's one in every family.
Yeah.
And there's always one in every family to a greater or lesser degree.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
Most people get their lives together, but they go through a heck of a time sorting it out while everybody else is just kind of going along. And Larry's never going to sort it out. That's really clear. But the father's trying so hard.
Oh, he's got such hope, such hope.
Yeah, he has such hope for his son. This time it's going to work. And he's the one who's had the adventurous spirit that the father always really appreciated. Unfortunately, it's really self-destructive.
Yeah.
But the thing is the conversation he's having with that Jason Robards, I can't remember his name, but that he's having with Gil, is he says, you know, I know you think I was a bad father and you're a good one, so I need advice on what to do. And he's like, Steve Martin, for one thing, is, you know, stunned. And then he's feeling bad for his dad when he's talking about how he just never, what went wrong with the son, who knows. And he's like, oh, no, I'm not a great father. You know, Kevin, got emotional problems. He's going to have to see a therapist. Taylor kisses all the little boys in school. And this is when you're finding out everybody's got something, right?
Yeah.
And the other kid, you know, runs into a wall with a bucket on his head or whatever it is that he does. We see him doing plenty of stuff because it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then the father says to him, oh, don't worry so much. You were always a worrier.
Yeah.
Which is just what's wrong with his son, Kevin. And he says, and he has said before to his wife, I think, he's just like me and I don't want him to be like me.
Yeah.
you know. And so you're seeing all this stuff come together when the father did understand him. He may not have been there as a close person. Mm. That's not his personality. But he sees and understands who Gil is. And he says, don't worry about it.
Yeah. You worry too much. Yeah.
You always did.
Yeah. And, you know, when you think about it, you know, you see Steve Martin, and I know he needed that to realize.
Yeah.
But, you know, he says, this is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. And it's like, you know, don't worry too much. It's like, okay, that's the wrong stuff, but look at this. Just look at everybody.
Right.
You know, there's so much good. And we're worried about, you know, that's like a human nature thing, isn't it? It's like you can get 20 compliments in one piece of negativity, and the negativity is what blossoms in your head.
Isn't that funny how that is? That's the only thing you see.
Right.
Because you didn't get it perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe that just says a lot about me, but since brought it up.
No, it says that I'm exactly the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah. I think it's just natural.
Well, yeah. But the thing I like about watching these families is, so you have Gil's family. They're the most normal family, I would say, or they're meant to be the most normal family. They've got stuff, but you know, everybody's got stuff, and their kids are doing okay at school and everything. Then you have his sister, who, let's see, what's her name? Susan? No, whatever her name is.
Which one?
Susan, who's married to Nathan.
Okay, yep.
It's just so funny. Uh-huh. Who's Rick Moranis, isn't it? No.
Yes, it is, yep.
Yes.
Yep.
So young. but the thing is, so the one family is just being a family, right?
Mm.
They're just, the mother's running the family, she's home with the kids and all this stuff. He's working. Then you got this family where they're younger, you can see, but he wants to use all the scientific principles to make their child a super genius overachiever.
Oh.
And this kid is three, maybe?
Oh.
Just adorable, however this oldest kid is. And she's earnestly doing things in different languages and doing math and everything. And the mother is so frustrated because they're not just living more like a normal family.
Yeah. I mean, when she's together with the families, she just sees the other kids having a good time.
Yeah.
And her daughter,
like, our kid is weird.
Yeah. Her daughter standing there like a statue, and
she doesn't understand what the other kids are doing.
Yeah. She's not being part of things.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, yeah.
She can't play. She doesn't understand how to just have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then you have the older sister, Diane Wiest, who is good in everything she's ever in.
So
I just love her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she's struggling because her husband's left her for a younger woman or secretary or whoever, because, you know, but she's got two difficult teenagers, and they would be difficult no matter what. But of course it's worse because there's no father. And she's got this rebellious daughter who's, you know, hooking up.
Mm-hmm. Named she's Julie, got this, aptly named Julie.
Yeah, well, it was me to the life. And the part where she shaved her head, I went, oh my gosh, I forgot I did that. You know? So.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah.
And
hats off to Joaquin Phoenix, by the way. And Martha Plimpton, too. Martha Plimpton played,
she was really
Julie.
Good.
They were both so good. And there's such a moving.
And Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, there's
that's what you say his name.
Keanu Reeves is.
As the,
so good in this, yeah. I
yeah.
mean, it's
he's
yeah.
perfect.
He was perfect for it, right?
As the goofy boyfriend.
Oh, but there's a scene where Diane Wiest and Joaquin Phoenix, Joaquin, he's having trouble not having a guy around, and
Gary, yeah,
yeah, he just doesn't know. He's lost without any kind of male guidance, and so he decides, you know, hey, I want to live with my dad. And
it's
heartbreaking, you know, right here in this comedy. But this is what this comedy does. It's so true.
Mm-hmm.
It's so true. And then, you know, he calls his dad, and Helen Buckman, Diane Wiest is just sitting there. She just knows that this is going to be a disaster.
And you can see the pain on her face.
You can see that she says, well, he's not the same, you know, and, you know, and then that call happens, and then it was heartbreaking. Yeah, and the guy just basically said, "I don't think that's a good idea." You know,
yeah.
And Oh, you know, again, Joaquin Phoenix just was great. No, he was perfect. Even back then. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's always he's a good actor. He's a really good actor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he just and it is heartbreaking, and he's struggling with a lot of things that he can't share with his mother. So, because he's got a secret, you know, and he's coming in and locking his door and hiding brown paper bags under his bed and everything. Well, it turns out, and she sends in, I can't remember his name in the movie, but you know, Julie's boyfriend.
Oh, Todd. Todd.
Yeah, Todd. Of course, mm-hmm. Todd.
Absolutely. That Todd.
It's yeah, that Todd. Did you just call him that Todd? But anyway, yeah. So she they look at him and they send him in to talk to him, and basically, yeah, he's as young boys do. Things have begun to happen in the middle of the night when he wakes up, and so he's trying to figure it out. So he's got all this pornography he's watching. And he's like, and I explained to him, says Todd, that's just how it is.
That's what little dudes
are supposed to do. And he says, and she goes, and what did he say? She goes, he smiled. He goes, I didn't even know he had teeth. You know, it's just, and so that family is, so it's funny because the one family, the scientific family, is very ordered. There's only one kid. They're very methodical in how they're doing everything. The other families are very chaotic, but in extremely different ways, right?
Yeah.
The one family, it's kind of a healthy sort of chaos, Gil's family.
Mm-hmm.
And in Diane Weiss' household, it's everything's out of control because it's out of balance.
Mm. Yeah.
And she's doing, everybody's doing the best they can. That's the thing I like about this, is that's what we relate to. From the outside, we can see these people's flaws or good things that they're missing, all this stuff. But they're all doing the best they can.
Hmm.
And so when the father says that thing to Gil about you worried too much, you always did, that means he was paying attention to his kid in his own way. He was doing the best he could.
Hmm. Yeah.
He couldn't be a close father. He was a colder father. That's just how he was. And who knows what else was going on.
Hmm.
But they were all doing the best they could. And so when, it's funny, I asked my husband, I said, because he, as I've said, loves this movie too. I said, if you had something to say about this movie, what would you say? Mm-hmm. And he said, what's that quote from Tolstoy? Happy families are all alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way.
Hmm.
And he goes, and these families, or we see them at moments when they can go either way, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and so, and I was like, yeah, and because, and I know I've said this here before, I was like, because Tolstoy says that at the beginning of Anna Karenina, and it's important for the way he's telling that story, but I think he's wrong. Happy families and unhappy families are the way they are because of one key thing. Happy families are happy because in general, the family members are all being unselfish and trying to serve each other, which sounds very high-minded and lofty, but it means setting the table without complaining. It means, you know, Gil can't have his promotion because he's trying to be home with his kid more. It means all these things that people are doing to try and, you know, make the family run the way it should, which is you have to be unselfish. That's part of what a family teaches you. That's why it's called the domestic church.
Hmm.
That's why God made Adam and Eve first, and then they knew each other and had children, because that's the cornerstone of everything.
Hmm. Yeah.
And so then you look at the unhappy families. They've always, and I don't think we have anybody, well, there is one person who's this way, and they all have at least one person who's unselfish and not caring about anybody but themselves.
Hmm.
For whatever reason. It could be legitimate because they're messed up for some other reason. It could just be they're a jerk. You know, we've all got our things. They're unbalanced somehow in how they're living their lives. And so what we see here is, amidst all these people who are just kind of going along, you have Larry. And Larry, something's wrong with Larry, you know?
Yeah.
Larry can't settle down. Larry's a habitual gambler to the point where he's going to be killed if he can't pay back a huge amount of money. And the minute that the father promises he will help pay back the money, Larry's like, oh, great, because I've got this other deal going in South America. And then he blames his father, right? Just like Gil's blaming his father because he was distant and you were a bad father. Larry blames his father and says, you're the one who always told me to go big and dream and live my dreams. Well, I'm doing that. And as a result, look at poor Cool. Okay, first of all, please rename that kid. But he has been dragged from pillar to post by his Las Vegas showgirl mother, who dumped him off on this terrible father who's not a father at all. And his selfishness is making everybody around him miserable. His own father and his own son.
Absolutely. Yeah, that whole Jason Robards or Frank Buckman and Larry, that whole line of story was also so very true. And, that's what's amazing about this movie. Larry comes home. Frank is just so happy to see him.
Oh, yeah.
And then, look at my new car, or look at this car I restored.
Oh, yeah.
How much money do you need? You know, I know you've got to look good for these deals you're about to make. You know, and you know that Frank's got to know that this is not going to go well, but he's just so hopeful. And
he wants to believe.
Yeah,
this must be the nail in the coffin.
Yeah.
But he's not letting himself believe it. Although when Larry shows up with Cool at that family party, that has to be, I mean, he just ignores it and shoves him at his wife. Frank does.
Yes, he does.
Mm-hmm. Who she's, going to be a good grandmother and everything. But it's the kind of thing where you just go, he's just not letting himself see it. You're right. He loves this kid so much.
Yeah. And then I'm sorry. Go ahead and finish.
I was just going to say,
when he, he went to Gil for that advice and then he decides on his own and he sits Larry down and he explains to him, this is what I'm going to do. And what he's doing for Larry is incredible.
Oh yeah.
He's like, I'm going to pay your debt off $1,000 a month. You're going to come to work with me at the office or store. I can't remember what
hardware store or something, yeah. I think.
And then you're going to learn the business. And then in 3 years, I'm giving you the business.
I mean, that's incredible.
Incredible, right? And then Larry and Larry says, okay. And Frank is just like full of joy and hope. Mm-hmm. And he's like, this is going to work out. It's finally going to work out. Starts to get up out of the table. And then Larry says, now how about if I add this little twist?
And, got a little wrinkle
and
for you.
And Frank sits down and Larry says, I just have a deal brewing in Argentina or whatever he said. And if I go down there and that doesn't work out, then we put your plan into action. And Frank knew at that moment that he was just gone. There was nothing that he could do. And that blew me away. That it was so well done.
Well, and it was interesting watching both people as the other one was talking about their plan. Because as you're watching Frank very happily say, here's the plan. I've worked it all out. This is going to be great. And it would be great, as you said. But we're watching Larry's face as he's listening. And it's just kind of, and both actors are so good. It's just diminishing and diminishing and diminishing. And you could see, he could see himself in a prison, basically.
Yeah.
Because this is not his thing.
Mm.
And then he starts talking about, well, how about this? And his father kind of does the same thing while he's listening. He just diminishes. Yeah. Because it's basically hitting each time for each person. Reality's hitting. And they're both, this is the moment when they both realize we're done.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean Larry's not going to show up again in about 3 years wanting more money or something like that.
Yeah.
But their relationship is forever cemented in a different way.
And how about the openness to life in this movie?
Oh, yes.
You know, so we have Mary Steenburgen, who is also terrific, you know, Steve Martin's wife, who she's pregnant and at a bad time, you know, for the family. Mm-hmm. Gil has just quit his job out of frustration and things. But also Jason Robards. After Larry leaves, or Larry's getting ready to leave or whatever, he talks to Cool, and Cool says, "My dad's leaving." And he says, "I know, he's not coming back." And he said, "How would you like to live here?" And that was a beautiful moment. And Cool says, "Yeah, you know, I think I'd like that."
Yeah, just so. Doesn't he have a little smile on his face? He's like, or kind of just look relieved.
Yeah.
I mean, just kind of like his body language, like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you like to live here with us? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and gosh, you know, that's perfect, you know, because if Cool didn't want to be there, that would have been extra hard. But Cool is just like, you know, he's as done as Frank is with Larry. And well,
and in 1989, the funny thing is, of course, now we don't think about this at all. But in 1989, when Larry shows up and or Cool shows up at the front door, having followed Larry into the house for the family party, he's a biracial child.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's black. And the whole family's just looking at him. And his mother was a Vegas showgirl and all this stuff. And that doesn't even actually matter to them. And they don't actually even care that he's black. No. It's just such a shock.
Right.
That just wasn't a thing then. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know? Mm. And so that tells you also how very different Larry's life is.
Yeah.
And here's this poor kid who's been shunted around, as I said. And for Jason Robards or Frank and his wife to take on this kid, they're also taking on something that's going to be a challenge when they're putting him in school, when they're doing whatever. You know, they're going to have to help him navigate a society that's, well, how come you have two old white people with you?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and your big white family and all this stuff. And no, and like I say, that's never an issue. But that, watching it in the theater in 1989, that was just always kind of a subtext, not for how the kid would get on, because you don't really think about that. But when he shows up, you're just like, this is different.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Here's the family black sheep, basically. Not the kid, but,
right.
You know, Larry.
Yeah. Like, I also really, really loved Gary, who's Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, yeah.
His moment where he turns and understands who his mom is. When they're at the drag race and her daughter is freaking out because there was an accident and she didn't want Todd to be in that in the first place. And she's, you know, starting to leave. And Diane West says, "You get in that truck. This is marriage. You go with him." Right.
Yeah.
And then when Gary saw that, it's like he changed his opinion of his mom right there. Because everything that he thought, you know, it's like, you know, maybe it was her fault that they got divorced or, you know, they're his parents. He's got to be just full of feelings about whose fault it might be, how hard my life is, you know, and all this stuff. But to see her defend marriage like that was great. It was another great moment.
Especially because it was that Todd.
Right.
He knew she didn't like him. This was her chance to break them apart, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's one point earlier when Todd's leaving, or is it, I think Todd's leaving.
Yeah,
when
he says,
what's it about all the women in this family that make all the men in the family want to leave?
Right.
Because he idolizes Todd also, as you say. He's desperate for male companionship and guidance and leadership. I mean, just like a kid that age would be. That's why you need a father and a mother.
That's right. Yeah.
And so, or at least that's why it's designed that way. Sometimes it can't always be that way.
Yes.
But the thing is that watching her do that meant she was going against everything she'd ever said about Todd and the fact that they shouldn't be together.
Yeah.
She was doing it for the good of the couple.
Mm-hmm.
So he was watching her step up and be bigger, be unselfish for the sake of the family, too.
Yeah.
And she said, maybe they'll make it, maybe they won't. The odds aren't good, but we're going to give them every chance. Yeah,
that little conversation, that part of the conversation was also good, you know. So after that incident, they're walking along, and Gary notes that, you know, why did you do that? And she said, well, in 6 months, you know, I give him 6 months, I think is what she said.
Yeah.
You know, and she was just being really honest with him, and I think he appreciated that too. And
but she said, I love you kids, and I want to give you what you want, and she wants Todd.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then, if we go back to Steve Martin and Mary Steenburgen for a minute. So she's pregnant. Bad timing. And then this is the awakening of Gil Buckman from that moment forward, realizing what all this is. You know what I mean? I mean, that's the best way I can describe it. It's like he opens like a flower in the next, I don't know, 15 minutes of the movie. That scene in the at the play was brilliant. Yeah. It was so good.
But I was thinking, I also really loved the way they just so succinctly captured the struggle between the two of them when she's like, well, so the baby, you're saying you want me to have an abortion, because he's talking very negatively. He's not saying that, but she's like, you're saying you want me to have an abortion, which, first of all, in 1989, that makes you cringe anyway, but this is a happy, loving family too.
Yeah.
And he says, no, no, it's your body. It's your, she's like, no, don't do that. What do you want? And he goes, well, what do you want? Or whatever. And she goes, I want to keep it. And he goes, oh, great. You get to do what you want. Yeah. I have to. I have to go to the office. I have to coach this game. I have to
my whole life
is have to.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is perfect, because everybody feels that way sometimes about their family, especially when you're the parents.
Yeah.
The script,
another great thing about it is they set that up, because during the kids' party, Mary Steenburgen was talking to one of the sisters about how she, you know, had to struggle about whether to go to work or not, or stay home. And one of the sisters said, so what does Gil think? And she says, Gil wants me to do what I want. But it was a frustration. It was like he wasn't holding up his half of the relationship. It's like, tell me what you think. Can you please tell me what you think? You know, and he wasn't
doing that.
And then they pulled that out again at that moment. He's like, I want what you want. And then she says, well, I want to keep it. And then he loses his mind. You know, it's like, come on, dude.
He's having to come to grips with it. We all have those moments when we're faced with this reality of just life with a bunch of other people, and we just resent it.
Yeah.
And we're angry, and we're mad, or we're sorry for ourselves, all the things. And then you have some time to get used to the idea, to see the other possibilities. And that's one thing I love about the roller coaster scene. And see, I'm starting to break up a little, because I'm like, to me, this is so sweet. When that all whole thing happens, the play's being destroyed, and it's the chaos. She's laughing. He's like, it's all ruined, you know.
And that was the moment where he finally broke, you know. And he
puts his hand over her stomach and just smiles so tenderly at her. It's just so beautiful.
Yeah. And, yeah, so we haven't even talked about Grandma. Grandma's being passed around house to house. First to make room for Larry.
Yeah.
And old Frank, you know, is like, she's still alive, you know.
That's his mother.
That's his mom. She's still alive. Yeah, his Frank's wife spent a lot of time just horrified.
No, she's such a sweet woman.
Yeah, so good. And then you get to the point where, you know, Steve Martin and Mary Steenburgen are having this problem, you know, just this tense thing, and then she just trots in, Grandma, does the famous roller coaster speech.
Mm-hmm.
You know, life is like a roller coaster. Some people like the merry-go-round, but I don't like the merry-go-round. I like the roller coaster. And Mary Steenburgen knows what she said.
Yeah.
And she says, that is one smart woman. And he's like, yeah, if she's so smart, why is she sitting in the neighbor's car? That was really funny.
He's mad because he's like, of course I get what she's saying. But he's like, oh, right. She says one thing like this. And because I think she's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And then they go to the play and they're on the roller coaster and he can feel it. And then he decides that he likes it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great.
When you say open to life, of course, the whole end, the very end of the movie is precisely that.
Yes, yeah.
You see them all in the waiting room for, it's Diane Wiest has married the biology teacher.
Yeah.
She's having a baby, and they show, let's see, everybody's had a baby, basically. Gil and his wife have had a baby, and Julie and Todd have had a baby. And I love that Jason Robards is carrying around Cool.
Yes.
You know.
Right.
The little girl has, the mother is pregnant, and she's the little girl is wearing, you know, silly antenna things and playing like an idiot, just like she should, you know.
Oh, that's great.
All the things. Because it was, and I remember at the time, I saw a review that said, oh, right, babies make everything better. What a dumb ending for some critic. And I was like, no, you don't understand. This is what happens. People have babies. When you're married, the love you feel is physically expressed, and it sure turns up as a baby sometimes. And that's how families are. And all these cousins together are going to have the best time. That whole family right then was in that moment of joy. They'll go back to their crazy, chaotic lives, but they're allowed this moment of joy.
Yes.
And for us to see how everything's turning out.
Yeah. I love how they did that end too. It's like somebody's having a baby, but we don't know who. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And then just, you know, and then we find out it's her and she wasn't even pregnant at in the scene before.
Right.
Yeah. So it was great.
And she's older.
Yeah.
You don't expect her to have, I mean, she's got older kids.
Uh-huh.
And a grandchild even.
Love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really good. Yeah. What a tremendous movie.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I'm so glad you picked it.
Yeah. I'm so glad to talk about it. But yeah, this movie, I did see it, like I said, when it came out, but this is a movie that's, you know, just stays with you all the time, and it's a good one to have that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the roller coaster thing, that comes back to mind, you know.
Yeah.
It just does, you know, it's in there.
Yeah, because I'm the person who would be on, I actually love roller coasters, really love them, but in that scenario, I would be the person sitting there wishing I was on the merry-go-round.
You know,
I would just like everything to go the way it's supposed to go.
That's right.
I was thinking too, there were two points that were made that we don't need to talk about in depth, but I would like to point them out. Because this movie is so funny and so many things are going on, and none of them, I mean, there are the moments like we talked about, but you know, it's not being hammered on really. And I do love the point that Jason Robards says to Steve Martin. So Frank DeGill, you know, you never quit worrying about your kids. You know, Larry is 30 or something. Yeah. And he says, I still worry about him.
Yeah. It doesn't ever go away.
Yeah. It doesn't go away. And you don't do it as much or in the same way, but you do even once they're married, you know?
Yeah.
And then the other one, I was just thinking about this going, so Gil's worried because Kevin's not normal, right? Seeming, right? And of course, anybody worries about that. And you want to think they're as close to normal as possible. So let's not go to a doctor. In this situation, I understood all these impulses. But what do you do when your kid's not normal?
Hmm.
How do you deal with it? And then you look at the kids in this movie. Most of them, as we said, aren't what you call normal. Because what's normal?
Yeah, what is normal? That's what
everybody
I would say.
Has these blips, these ups and downs, and kind of like the roller coaster is like, you know, here's the moments when you're really struggling to get up that hill.
Yeah.
And the other moments, which are scary sometimes, which is you're going down the hill, you know.
That's brilliant. Yeah, that's brilliant. We are not all the same. And that's one of the beautiful things about the Catholic Church that is illustrated by like the saints. Because the saints are not normal. I mean,
no.
You're saying, oh, you know, people sometimes have this idea of a saint, and this is what a saint is, and you think, oh, they're all the same, you know, but they are so very not, and it's like everybody's different, and the recognition of that difference in these paths to heaven are it's a beautiful thing, and it's illustrated, you know, in the church itself.
Well, and it is. And the other thing is that I'm just thinking as you were talking about this, about the saints, of course, they are showing a full expression of what life is like if a person is living, doing what God wants them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you think about the things God asks some of these people to do. And of course, they're very different, so it's all expressed differently in their personalities. But you think about the fact that not only that, but God made them all different like that. He made them wildly, crazily different.
Hmm.
Just like you and just like me. I mean, he were not this way by accident.
Yeah.
I mean, according to Catholic theology, you know, your parents make your body, God puts your soul in there. God creates your soul at that same moment. And it's according to what he wants for you in that time period, in right now.
Yeah.
And so every time you're looking at all these people who are so difficult to deal with or not normal, or just like in the context of this family, it's that way on purpose.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, you look at the saints. I mean, because I mean, think of, wasn't it Simon the Stylite or whatever, who lived on a pillar in the middle of the desert, praying all the time? And people would pass baskets of food up to him, I think. But, because they were like, this guy is holy. Well, yeah, and we just kind of laugh, but, you know, we don't need that person right now.
Yeah.
But we still have contemplative nuns and monks.
Yeah, they show us a lot. That's right.
Yeah, and they're essentially doing that same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have the big personalities, the people who, I mean, just, it's like you say, it's all God's expressions through these people, through them saying, I do want to do what you want. What is it you want? Okay.
Yep.
And again, that's the, how do you have the happy family or the unhappy family?
Mm.
You know?
Yep.
The church is the family. So what are we doing to, be serving each other.
Right, right. Absolutely right. Beautiful stuff. Mm-hmm. Beautiful stuff. So well
good
presented.
Idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's great. So
I love
thank
this
you.
Movie.
Yeah. Thanks so much for I'm just so glad you like it as much as I do. So that's
no,
so great.
We'd have to have an arm wrestling contest to see who wins. I mean,
oh, that's good.
I think we both love it the same.
Yes, that's awesome. All right, so next up for us is a something I know nothing about, Enchanted April by Elizabeth Von Arnim.
Yes.
So what's in store for me here?
It is four people who are unhappy with their lives at home, and one of them sees, four women, one of them sees an ad in the paper for an Italian villa that's for rent.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I can't afford this on my, and it's raining and awful in London. I can't afford this on my own, but maybe I can find somebody to split it up with me. And she sees this one other woman who she thinks might do it too. And they advertise to find two other people. And so it's about these four women going there, but they all have their own things. Two of them are married. One of them never wants to get married, but it's always being pursued. The other one is just awful. so selfish. But it's a really, I don't know. This book captured me from the moment I listened to it.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. And I'll be curious to see if it grabs you the same.
Very good.
Or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
That's great.
I don't think I gave a very compelling description at all. So
no.
Forge ahead despite
it's very
that.
Good. I shall forge. I shall forge. And you said you listened to it. Did you? Is it a good audiobook? It must be.
Yeah. I actually think I heard it maybe on Classic Tales or something like that.
Okay. Okay.
That podcast. But yeah, it's a good listen.
Good.
And all it's right. A pretty short book.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Sounds terrific. Well, good.
Okay.
All right.
I hope you like it.
I think I will. I most likely will.
No.
So
I think you will, or I wouldn't have picked it.
Absolutely. Right. All right. All right. Well, thank you again. And thanks to everyone for listening.
Yes. I hope you're in your happy, though probably chaotic families.
You bet. All right. Take care, all.
Yeah. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.